Om Nagana Timidanda Shaganan Jana Shlakaya Chakshuran Miritam Yena Tismai Shigurvena Maha. So, last week we finished reading from the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and the fourth chapter is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. And Krishna ended up talking about basically renouncing the fruits of the work and also renouncing in general. So in the beginning of the fifth chapter, Krishna, Arjuna, is kind of bewildered by Krishna's instructions. Bewildered in the sense that Krishna is talking about work, and then he's also talking about renunciation, and he's giving both instructions, working in devotion and renunciation. So Arjuna has this conception that renunciation means basically to go to the Himalayas and just sit down and meditate and acquire knowledge, cultivate knowledge, but not to do anything in this world. So he's kind of bewildered why Krishna is giving what he considers to be equivocal instructions. Equivocal means like contradictory instructions. So that's how we start the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So these are the chapter sections. I'm not going to go over this section. So Arjuna, in the first verse, and who's going to read the first verse? Maybe just to prove who can read the first verse.
Arjuna said, "O Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work. And then again, you recommend work for devotion. Now you kindly tell me, definitely, which of the two is more beneficial?"
So Arjuna has not really understood at this point that work in devotion is a karmic work. That means work without a reaction. In the fourth chapter, Krishna is talking about three things. Vikarma karma and akarma. You got those three things? Vikarma means things or action against the injunctions of the shastras, which give you a bad... let me give you a practical example. I don't want to be too theoretical. Let's say I kill an animal. Or let's even say something that's more direct according to the modern culture. Let's say I go to Walmart Superstore. You've heard of that before? That's where America worships. So I go to the Walmart Superstore and I buy a leg of a chicken. Yuck. I mean, hopefully you're saying that. Maybe you're not. Anyway, perhaps by the end of the class, you will be saying that. So, let's say I buy a leg of a chicken. So that's a vikarmic activity. By buying it, transporting it, eating it, cooking it, condoning it, that means saying, that's all right. That's what condoning means. Or anything related with that leg of the chicken gives me a negative, painful reaction. So what would be the reaction for buying the chicken, a part of a chicken? Does anyone know? What happens next slide? No one knows. Yes. Cock-a-doodle-doo. As they say. A chicken birth. So that's what I mean by vikarma, okay? Practical example. All right, and as far as the karma, basically means do something good in this world and you get a good result. Okay, I'll give you an example of something good materially. Let's say I help old ladies cross streets. You know, whatever. And so what sort of good reaction do I get for that? Did I take birth as an old lady? No. I think that's a little too much humor. So, no, I will be helped in many ways in the future. People, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. That's one of Newton's laws. So that's called karma, when you're good. Of course, generally when we're talking about karma in the Vedic context, we're talking about someone who performs sacrifices for fruitive gain. To eventually go where? Does anyone know where? heaven. Those pearly gates, right? But heaven is not is different from Vaikuntha or the spiritual world. The problem with heaven, what's the problem with heaven? It's temporary. Because shine punye marcha lokam vishanti. What happens, you go up there, you're having a good old time with all those apsaras. Of course, in different religions, they're called different things. But anyway, we won't get too specific. You're having a good old time, you know, dancing, watching Indra's dancing performance. And when your good karma runs out, that means your bank balance of good karma runs out, your garland starts to fade. That's one of the signs. Fortunately, my garland is not fading. So one of the signs your good karma is running out, and then everyone looks at you really strange. And next thing you know, shine punya marcha lokam vishanti, you come back here. And you got to build up your bank, karmic bank balance again, go up and down again, up and down, okay. And then there's the final thing was akarma. That means activities that don't have any karmic result, good or bad, but they have a result. What's the result that our karmic activities have? What? No, that's a byproduct. What result do they have? Connection with Krishna and going back to the, you know, making spiritual progress, eventually going back to the spiritual world. And guess what? About those akarmic activities, when are they lost? They're never lost. Swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. A little endeavor can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. What's the most dangerous type of fear? According to Prabhupada in the Gita. Does anyone know? Taking birth in a lower species. You know, waking up in the womb of a mother dog. Or waking up after you take birth, of course. But opening your eyes for the first time and having that big tongue licking you. Those of you who have dogs know what I'm talking about. That's the most dangerous thing to happen. So a little endeavor in akarmic activities gives you so much permanent happiness, result, and ultimately is a step to going back to home, back to Godhead. So anyway, these are the three things. So Arjuna is really bewildered by this question of renunciation or work. Because generally we think spiritualists, I mean, let's say you go into, let's take Walmart again, okay? Because everybody knows about Walmart. And you see someone working in Walmart. Do you think in your mind that he's very spiritual just by looking at him? No. But if you see someone sitting in the Himalayas going, Om, Shanti, 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 do you think he's spiritual? Naturally. I mean, the mind thinks he's spiritual, right? Or he has long hair and beard and reddish garments. Or like me, you know what, semi-red. So you naturally think it's spiritual. So that's really a misunderstanding. Because the guy or girl who's in Walmart can be more spiritual than the person sitting in the Himalayas. Why is that? And it in many cases is. Because the person who is in Walmart, if he's dedicating the activities to Krishna, those are called akarmic activities. And if the person in the Himalayas meditating, I'll give you an example. Who was meditating for something bad? Hiranyakashipu. Ravan. And Ravana was so enthusiastic with his meditation, he was offering something that practically no one has ever offered before. Well, with a few exceptions. What was he offering? His heads. Ravana had 10 heads, so I guess you have some spares there. Actually, when he offered them, they kept throwing back. So he just, Om Brahmaya Namaha, Om Brahmaya Namaha. That's very spiritual. So his intention was not spiritual. So remember, intention. So he's not doing it to please Krishna. So that activity is not spiritual. So But renunciation to get out of this material world is really what's being referred to in this chapter. So, which is better, renunciation to get out of this material world or work in devotion? And Arjuna thinks they're contradictory. And Krishna says renunciation and work are really not contradictory, not opposed to each other, but they work with each other. One must learn to work in a renounced spirit. In the second text, who's going to read the second text for us? Okay, and there's a good reason for that. One thing is, by renunciation of work, that is basically what's being described here is a type of Sankhya yoga, try to analyze things, or jnana. By renunciation of work, one ultimately comes to the understanding that the goal is to work in devotion. So it's a preliminary step. And that way, they're actually both good for liberation because one leads to the other. But the problem with just mere renunciation is that the taste for sense objects remains. Raso bhajan rachopyas param drishtani vartante. But by work and devotion, the taste for sense objects goes away because one has a higher realization or a higher taste. So let's say if you just try to renounce things. Let's talk about renunciation in general. Renunciation is sort of a negative word, isn't it? To give up, right? Isn't that? Like if I say, I renounce my car. What does that mean? I'm giving up my car. And which is probably a good idea if it's an old car. But so basically it means to give up something. So what happens if you just try to do a don't or a negative? You can't do a don't. Because if I give up my car, especially if it's a nice car, I have a Honda. Hondas are one of the best cars. So if I give up my car, let's say I just give it up. I mean, for example, sometimes I let other people drive the car. And I'm thinking the whole time, where is my car? And I let Mother Krishna Priya drive it from time to time because, you know, I'm a kind-hearted soul. So I'm thinking, my car, it's not here. So, you understand the point? So you give it up, something you're attached to, you don't give up the attachment. The attachment remains because the attachment is there in the heart as both two things, a kuta and a bija. The seed of desire and the inclination, kuta means the inclination, bija means like a seed. So you have the seed of desire and the inclination of desire. I can give up things all day long, but I'll be dreaming about them at night. Right? I mean, like, give the example of Viswamitra Muni. Before he became Viswamitra Muni, he was engaged in severe renunciation, and then who came along but Menaka? And what happened? Nobody knows. She rang her ankle bells. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. He opened his eyes, and as a result, who was born? Shakuntala was born. So that's the problem. You renounce things and you think of them. I mean, actually, the things you give up, you think of more than the things you have. That's really amazing. You think, oh, what I gave up to join the Hare Krishna movement. I used to, you know, I used to have a plane before I joined, not just one of those model planes, an actual plane, a Cessna. I used to have a plane, I used to have a sports car. Oh, what did I do with my life? Not really, because I'm doing work in devotion. I'm just giving an example. So that's the problem with mere renunciation. And work, the interesting thing about work and devotion, it's according to your psychophysical nature. So you're going to happy doing it anyway, materially and spiritually. This is what Krishna is teaching in Bhagavad Gita. One of the important lessons to Arjuna is work according to your nature. We all have different natures. And they're categorized as four different types, right? Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. None is better than the other. It's not that a Brahmana is more likely to go back to Godhead than a Shudra. If you get the mercy of a devotee, I was just listening to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was a dog that got the mercy of Shivananda Sen and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he went back to Godhead. He was chanting Hare Krishna, he went back to Godhead. So what to speak of a human being? So the whole point is, Rahuganai tat tapasadna yati, na chesiyad nirvapanad grahadva, na chandasa naiva jalagna suryara, vana mahabhara, vajovishekam. This is, for those of you who don't know Sanskrit, this is a verse spoken by Jada Bharata. He says to King Rahugana that you're not going to become spiritually advanced by becoming a good Brahmin, sannyasi, grahasta, or doing sacrifice, or doing austerities, but by taking the dust of a Mahatma, a great soul. This is his instruction. So this is the point. So you engage according to your nature. You like to study? Study for Krishna. You like to talk? Talk for Krishna. Don't talk on the telephone, send text messages all day long, useless things. If you like to manage something for Krishna. If you like to protect people, it's a kshatriya. Protect people for Krishna. Join Krishna's army. And then if you like to make money, make a lot of money for Krishna. And there's the box right over there. And the credit card machine. So if you like to do those things, or if you like to just do work with your hands, do it for Krishna. We have so many cars here that need to be fixed. And you go back to God, and everybody by doing his prescribed, and your mind is absorbed because you're doing something you want to do. If you put someone who is inclined to be a kshatriya in a meditative position, he will be very, very upset. And his mind will be very disturbed. If you put someone in a different varna or in the work of a different varna, his natural varna will ultimately come out. Like when Arjuna was meditating, because he was meditating to get weapons, which is a good reason to meditate, so he could fight with the Kauravas. He was meditating on Lord Shiva, and then what happened is that a big boar came out. That doesn't mean a boring person. That's worse than a boar with tusks. But anyway, so a big boar came out and was running at him. He was a demon. He took the form of a boar. He was running at Arjuna. And Arjuna took out, naturally, his bow and arrows and shot at the boar. At the same time, a Kurata hunter shot. And I guess the arrows hit the boar at the same time. And Arjuna said, "Why did you shoot your arrows? It was my boar." And the hunter said, "I didn't shoot an arrow." But if Arjuna had been a Brahmin, he would have said, "Thank you very much for protecting me." But because by nature he was a Kshatriya, he started a fight with this Kurata. This Kurata happened to be Lord Shiva. So he was fighting with him, and there were sparks coming from their body, and eventually he discovered it was Lord Shiva. So the point I'm making is that one's nature comes out. There's nothing you can do about it. If you put a Vaishya in the forest, he'll try to sell the trees. Right? He'll try to do business. That's all right. There's no problem with that. It just has to be done with the results going to Krishna. That's all. Very simple. So if you do your work for Krishna, giving the results to Krishna, that's a lot easier. Your mind won't be disturbed just trying to give up things. So this is what Krishna is saying here in the second chapter. And second verse, sorry. So third verse, who wants to read third verse?
"One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated from the muddy arm of Arjuna."
So this, of course, is talking about working in devotion. So the fundamental principle being taught here is you should renounce the fruits of all sense interactions. Not give up sense interactions. But if you just engage in renunciation, there's a big problem with outwork and devotion, which, as I mentioned previously, he looks like he has a big problem. Because there's, we mentioned this before, we'll go over it again, there's no legitimate engagement for the senses, and one cannot take shelter of using his senses in work that will purify him. In other words, if you're just renouncing and not working, then the senses naturally are active. By nature, we have active senses. They're senses that are an aspect of the soul. They're senses that are aspect of the subtle body. They're senses that are aspect of the gross body. And they need to act. So, therefore, if material desire arises, wow, one only has two options, which is mundane action or inaction, and both of them are pretty unpleasant. So we want to go for the pleasant thing rather than the unpleasant thing. From the Krishna conscious point of view, we see that everything belongs to Krishna. All the fruits of activities are meant for Krishna. Here's an interesting one. Your teeth don't even belong to Krishna, of course. Even your baby teeth. So therefore, you can't renounce anything. If something never belonged to you, how can you renounce it? If I go to your car and I say, I renounce your car, that's pretty stupid, isn't it? Of course, I may want your car, but it's not mine to renounce. So therefore, the principle is, because everything belongs to Krishna, this body, everything we own, manasa, deha, geha, yokya, shamor, arvi, lam, duyupade, nanakashore, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, my mind, my home, my family, my body, everything is yours, O Nandakishore. And I'm offering it to you. This is actual work in devotion. And so the conclusion is something we call, what is it called? Yukta Vairagya. That means to connect, use, like the word yoga. To connect the renunciation. The actual word vairagya means to give up passion. Raja. Like a sannyasi is called a big passionate one. Maharaja. Right? That's actually, to tell you the truth, that's not a traditional name for a sannyasi. The traditional name for a sannyasi is Swami. The word Maharaja being used for sannyasi is actually something more modern. So it helps with the preaching, you know, if someone calls you Maharaja. But it's traditionally a Kshatriya designation. Kshatriya, like Maharaj Prithu, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Prataparudra. That's a Kshatriya thing. Great, kingly person. But sannyasis may use that word for preaching. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur utilized that word, Maharaj, but traditionally it's not. So anyway, so vairagya means the giving up of passion. Passion is the desire to enjoy something. A passionate person, whatever they see, they want to enjoy. They want to eat it, possess it, or do something with it. It's like a dog. A dog sees something, forgive me, and a dog wants to just like fight with it, or have sex with it, or eat it. I mean, that's just naturally a dog's response. So the dog definitely has a passion, mostly ignorance. And yukta means you connect with Krishna through work in devotion. Understanding that everything belongs to Krishna and using it for the person to whom it belongs. So here it says, the perfect conception of renunciation is to use all things in the service of the ultimate owner, Krishna. By doing that, one not only renounces the objects of the senses, but also the concept of ownership. That's interesting. So action in Krishna consciousness is far better than any amount of artificial renunciation by a sannyasi of the, here we're going to describe what that is, Mayavadi school. So, what is a sannyasi of the Mayavadi school? Let's describe what the school is. We don't have any of those schools here, I think. But the Mayavadi school was headed up by someone named Sripad Shankaracharya. Sripad Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. And he came with a mission. His mission was to bring people to Vedanta. Because previously in India, people had rejected Vedanta under the guise of Buddhism, Jainism, and other sects like that. Why had they rejected Vedanta? It's very interesting. Because Vedanta had been misused, or the Vedas had been misused by Brahmins, so-called Brahmins, quote, Brahmanas. It had been misused by Brahmanas with the idea of basically making money. Because a Brahmana had an exclusive right in society to do what? Perform different samskaras, such as your name-giving, namakarana, such as your antyeshti, your funeral ceremony, safe birth samskara, griha pravesh, the housewarming ceremony. And so the Brahmanas started to have a monopoly. And not only that, but they were engaged in killing animals and sacrificing them, whereas in Kali Yuga, that's prohibited. Ashvamedha, Gomedha, prohibited. So the Brahmanas were doing these things, and also they considered that only someone who was born in a Brahmin family could be a Brahmana. That's an interesting concept. It's like saying, if your father was a doctor, then you are automatically a doctor. Does that make sense? My father was a surgeon. No, he wasn't, but anyway. Let's say, theoretically, my father was a businessman. He was a Vaishya. I wish he was a Vaishya. Anyway, my father was a businessman. But let's say my father was a doctor. So automatically, I'm a doctor. I can operate, right? Does that make sense? No. I still have to become qualified. And we know that anybody can become a doctor if they go through the schooling, they have sufficient skills. We don't say that because you're born in a non-doctor family, you can't become a doctor. You can turn that off. It's like my airplane taking off. It's reminding me of my Cessna. So you can't. So we don't say that you have to be born in a special doctor family like Trivedi, Chaturvedi's family to be a doctor. Anybody can be a good doctor. I mean, like we go in the hospital and we see people from all sorts of different backgrounds who are doctors, right? We see Chinese doctors, people from India who are doctors, Philippine doctors, Filipino doctors, South American doctors, right? It's not confined to one particular caste. It's a question of guna and karma, as Krishna said. So, in the same way, as far as a Brahmin, anybody could become a Brahmin, but the Brahmanas, or so-called Brahmanas in ancient times, and we're talking about 2,000 years ago, had a different idea. They thought, only us. And so the people got really upset, and they sort of rejected the Vedas. And especially Lord Buddha, he rejected the Vedas because people were misusing the Vedas. And therefore, it was necessary for Shankaracharya to bring people back to the Vedas. But they weren't quite ready to understand the conclusion of the Vedas. Vedas cha saveraham eva vedyo, by all the Vedas Krishna is to be known. So we had to teach like a covered Buddhism. And that was his philosophy. It's called Mayavadi philosophy. And there's different varieties of Mayavadi philosophy. How basically the Mayavadis say even the form of the Lord and his pastimes and the spiritual world, they're all illusion. And when you understand that, and when you realize that, it's hard to realize it, but when you understand and realize that, you've achieved spiritual perfection, that everything is illusion. Right? The Beatles also had a song like that, right? Nothing is real. Strawberry Fields Forever. Yeah, I'm not going to sing it for you. But they also had that song. But the interesting thing about those who preach that Mayavadi philosophy, they're very expert in trying to enjoy the illusion. If you think everything's an illusion, why are you doing anything? You know, you're an illusion. I used to think that before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Like, if I don't perceive something, it never happened. That's a different type of Mayavada philosophy. If a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to see it, has the tree actually fallen? Yes, it has, because Krishna's there to see it. He's in every atom. But because I'm not there, if I close my eyes, you don't exist. So you're all illusion. Do you accept that? That you're all illusion. You're just illusory figments. Even my imagination is an illusion. Even my thinking I have an imagination is an illusion. Even my thinking I'm here is an illusion. It's really bewildering. I can't understand illusion that much. And they say illusion is superior to God. So in other words, they say that illusion is God, which is kind of interesting. So anyway, so the Mayavadis, they engage in artificial renunciation, giving up this, giving that, and ultimately they become interested in the material world again. So the real way to become renounced from this world is giving everything to Krishna, but not just giving everything to Krishna, saying, damn it, I got to give everything to Krishna. But giving everything to Krishna with love. Patram pushpam palam poyam toyam yome bhakti prayachati. Because if you're just giving it to Krishna, it belongs to him, I got to give it to him. Nothing for me. This is the most miserable philosophy I've ever heard in my life. Right? If you think like that, you'll be miserable. But if you're thinking, I love Krishna, why should you love Krishna? Does anyone have any ideas? Because he's the boss. Is that a good idea? No, I don't like that idea. Why should you love Krishna?
Because he loves us.
He loves us. Yeah, that's one good thing. He loves us unconditionally. What's another good reason?
He's the most loved.
Why? He's Bhagawan. He has all these attractive features. Yeah. We're part and parcel. That's what I was looking for, too. We're part of him. You know, so, you know, we're inseparable. The only way we can enjoy is being connected with him. So there's a lot of good reason. And, you know, like Mother Krishna Priya pointed out, he's full of opulence. He's called Bhagawan. And that means he's all renounced, all famous, all powerful, all intelligent, all knowing. All these different qualities are there. All beautiful. I forgot about that one. And so there's many different reasons for loving Krishna. So, but to love Krishna, you have to hear about him. You have to know about him. And that's what our Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant to do. To teach people about Krishna so you can love him. To know him is to love him. Right? If you, just like if you see someone very attractive in this world, some movie star. What's the name of a movie star? Anyway, Rock Hudson. I never heard his name before. Give me someone I know. Anyway, whatever. I don't know. I haven't watched those movies in a long time.
Your Bollywood friend.
Bollywood friend. Okay. Vivek Oberoi, for you ladies. You look at him and you go, wow. You know, just like, you're attractive, isn't it? Or normally. Otherwise, I mean, it was just some ugly guy. I mean, maybe he'd be good in a monster movie or something. But you really wouldn't be attracted. So Krishna's like infinitely, whatever attractiveness Vivek Oberoi has, or Sushmita Sen, there's a lady for all of you men, Krishna has it infinitely more. It all comes from Krishna. Krishna is the source, the reservoir of all that attractiveness. And so you just look at Krishna. And Krishna's the best musician, too. Like, we all like music. He plays his flute. And not only the people become stunned, but the rocks melt. The deer, they just stare like that. The animate objects, or animate entities, become inanimate. And the inanimate entities become animate, right? So that's all attractive. So when you hear about Krishna, and so you're doing your work, yukta vairagya, connecting with Krishna, not just because it's what you're supposed to do, or you're going to get in trouble if you don't do it, or you're going to get bad karma if you don't do it. You're doing it because you love to do it. So you got those factors. It belongs to Krishna, and you love to do it because you've heard from Krishna, which requires hearing from Shushru Shro Shredadanasya Vasudeva Katavuchi. Shan Mahat Sevi Sevya Vipra Punya Tirtha Shevina. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yadahaitukam. So there's that point. If you hear about Krishna, render service to him, then automatically Gyan and what we call Vairagya comes, manifests itself for you. Isn't that wonderful? You automatically become nirapeksha, disinterested in the things of this world. So, because we have a schedule, I think 45 minutes was my allotted time, right? And I think I've done that already. So, any questions or comments about what we've gone through? We've only gone through two texts and see how much information is there. And there's a lot more in the later part of the fifth chapter. Yeah. Well, giving everything to Krishna, realizing that Krishna is the owner, and you have to take care of yourself in that context. Thank you for asking that question. Like, if I give my car to Krishna, does that mean I don't change the oil? I guess it may mean that, if you're a brahmachari in the Hare Krishna temple, but does that actually mean I don't change the oil, I don't polish it anymore? No, it's Krishna's now. Just let him change the oil. Let him polish the car. Let him change the tires. It all belongs, everything is yours, my Lord. No. You take care of it better because of who it belongs to. I'll give you the example. There was one devotee, his name was Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami had contracted a disease, which like eczema. He had sores all over his body and there was pus coming out of them. And so what happened is that he went to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was Krishna himself, was embracing him forcibly. And Sanatan Goswami was thinking, you know, I should commit suicide. You know, sometimes people think like that. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood his mind, and he said to Lord Chaitanya said to Sanatan Goswami that if I thought I could go back to God or become Krishna conscious or attain Krishna by giving up this body, I'd prepare to give up millions of bodies. But in addition, he said to Haridas Thakur, who was with Sanatan Goswami, he said, listen to what this person is saying. He wants to take another's property and misuse it. I'm paraphrasing. He wants to take another's property and misuse it. What do you think about that? And he said to Sanatan Goswami, your body belongs to me and I have many purposes to fulfill with that. Such as excavating the holy places in Vrindavan, Nana Shastra Vichara and Akadipano, Sadam and Samstapako, establishing Sat Dharma, that is eternal religious principles. And so many things I have to accomplish, Lord Chaitanya said. So you cannot act with another's property improperly. So when we realize our body belongs to Krishna, then we take care of our needs too. It's not that one just stops sleeping, stops eating, but eats to take care of the health. Not living to eating, but eating to live. There's a difference. Nowadays, people live to eat, right? Yep. Live to eat and sleep and mate and defend. But what Krishna wants is that we utilize all those things, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all can be used in different ways according to your ashram or varna, and use them for him. Take care of yourself. So it doesn't mean neglect of your self, either your subtle or gross body. It means taking care of them, realizing your needs. We talked about this morning, like there's this one psychologist, his name is Maslow. He has this hierarchy of needs. It's like a pyramid. You have a need for air. Anyone's heard of Maslow before? You have a need for air, food, water, light. You have a need for friendship. You have a need for autonomy, interdependence, fun, and ultimately spiritual things. Integrity and all these things like that, yeah.
Actually, Maslow says you can't even go
to yeah.
You can't reach the highest level of self-actualization. You can't reach Krishna consciousness if you don't meet those lower needs.
Exactly.
If those lower needs aren't met, you don't have good friends, good relationships, and activities, you know, that we want to do in Krishna consciousness. And in other words, you can, throughout the scriptures, there's so many devotees. Arjuna's life was a life of service, but it wasn't a boring life.
Yeah.
Prabhupada's life was a life of service, but it wasn't a boring life. It was a life of activity. So we just have to make our lives dedicated to Krishna, and we'll make sure that we have
our needs, yeah. Nitya nityanam chaitanam chaitanam eko bhavanam yogadadati kama. Yes, that's a fact. It's a very good point. That, and of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our acharya, he also states the same thing in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that we have needs, basic human needs, and they all have to be, we have a need for a mobile phone too. So, we don't have a need for a mobile phone. But anyway... But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that those basic needs have to be met if one is going to be steady in spiritual life. And I've seen many times before, some people sometimes are like shooting stars, that they neglect their basic needs, and they appear to be doing very well, but a shooting star is like, it gets extinguished after some time. A shooting star is actually a meteorite. And the meteorite burns up in the atmosphere. So we don't want to be like the meteorites or shooting stars. We want to be gradually ascending the spiritual path, realizing and taking care of our basic needs. And Krishna wants that too. And then you can offer. Like you're cooking something, you have to take care of the spicing. It's not that you offer Krishna raw food. Some of us do. But so I guess, any other questions? Quick questions, because it's... There's a time factor here because we're starting later, and I said I would finish in 45 minutes. Yeah, one more question.
I just wondered if you could announce
it. Okay, yeah, Sridhananda Maharaj is coming. What is it, the 13th he's coming? On the third Wednesday the 13th, he'll be here for a week. He's our most erudite scholar in the Krishna consciousness movement. He's so intelligent that I've seen him learn a language in 3 or 4 days. You know, it takes me a lifetime. I'm still learning English. But in 3 or 4 days, I mean, just like brilliant personality, analyzes Sanskrit like no one I've ever heard before. I mean, you can take the Sanskrit language, one word, and do like a one-hour analysis of that word in the context in which it is. So and he does it in a very educational, humorous way, too. So he's very entertaining, and he'll be having different programs. We'll be posting on the newsletter that we're sending out through the web. And if you're not getting the newsletter, see Golokananda Priya. That's her over there. And or you write down, and we'll put your name on the e-newsletter that goes out several times a week. And please read it and open it. That means open up the newsletter. You see all sorts of fancy colors and pictures in it and nice things in the newsletter. It's a very simple newsletter. You won't have to spend 3 or 4 hours reading it. So don't get scared of it. So it's very important that we give him a nice reception. And I've invited him to come here and do some preaching work. He's an old friend of mine. And we traveled together for many, many years. Beginning in 1971-72, so when Prabhupada was on the planet. So I know him quite well, and I highly recommend his erudition and enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so thank you very much. All glories to his divine grace. Shri Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Krishna ki jai.